Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck, and Jerry's here too, and that makes this Stuff You Should Know with a podcast.
That's right. Movie crush adjacent today. Mm-hmm. I put this one together in big thanks to Mark Mancini of HowStuffWorks.com. Great article in Vogue from Radhika Seth. Really good article from a guy named Douglas Lamon from Collider. And also Collider from Thomas Butt and the Mary Sue, Danielle Baranda, all good stuff about the Bechdel test. And we would be remiss if we didn't mention right out of the gate that on our own iHeart Network, we have a great podcast called The Bechdel Cast that's been around for a long time now. They've been with us for years.
Yeah.
And this is hosted by Caitlin Durante and Jamie Loftus. And it talks all about movies. Kind of through the lens of the Bechdel test or the Bechdel problem.
Yes, and you can get that wherever you get podcasts.
Very well done.
So what are we talking about, Chuck? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who know all about this. It's still interesting. There's other people who've maybe heard of it but don't quite know what it has to do. Maybe they're confusing it with a litmus test. And then other people are like, I've never heard those two words together in my life.
Well, maybe I think it might be fun if we just sort of work through the Casablanca example.
Okay.
And illustrate it and then give sort of the definition. Does that work for you?
It works for me. I just have to find that page.
Okay. Can I start while you look?
Sure.
So the movie Casablanca, one of the all-time greats, is on the AFI 100 Years, 100 Movie Quotes list with six different quote entries, making it the most, you know, the most number of quotes from a single movie on that list. And I still have not seen all of Casablanca. I watched a lot of it not too long ago. Didn't finish it.
Oh, yeah?
I meant to. It wasn't because I didn't like it. But I will say this, and I know we talked about it right after I saw it some, but I thought it was good, but I wasn't like, oh, my God, this is the best thing I've ever seen.
Okay, yeah, I vaguely remember talking about that.
Like,
yeah,
like plenty of movies from that era I liked much more. But I even know, here's Looking at You, Kid. Louis, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship. We'll always have Paris, of all of the gin joints and all the small towns, or all the towns in all the world. She walks into mine. Like, these are all just in the sort of, if you like movies, you've probably heard these, even if you haven't seen the movie.
Yes, but as a little aside, no one actually says, play it again, Sam, in that movie. Nope, they say, play it, Sam. Or they play as time goes by. A couple of other variations, but no one says play it again, Sam.
They don't say that.
The thing is, the reason we're talking about this and how it relates to the Bechdel test is that Casablanca, it's a great movie. There's a lot of great lines in it. Some of them are uttered by Lauren Bacall, but none of them are between two women. If Lauren Bacall's character, Ilse Lund, is speaking them, she's speaking them to a man. And then all the other men are speaking to other men or to Ilse Lund. There's no woman-to-woman conversation in Casablanca, which you might say, like, so? Well, actually, there's a big, fat explanation to that. So we're going to dive feet first into it. So open up, patriarchy, because we're coming in.
A quick statistic for you just to sort of illustrate part of the problem is USC Annenberg, I knew I'd get there, Their Inclusion Initiative did a study, and they're a think tank that looks at diversity in arts. They saw that just 33.1% of speaking roles, period, in the top 100 grossing movies of 2018. And that was, you know, 33%, like 67% of speaking roles in the 100 grossing films were men.
Yes. That was a big increase, though, from 2007, where 29.9% went to women.
Yeah.
I was being facetious about
3%-ish.
And one of the reasons I saw is that that the majority of supporting roles, especially like one scene, like speaking part, just a bit part, just kind of like very quick roles, those are almost always or very typically filled by men, right? I saw it described as, does your protagonist report a crime to a cop? Cop's probably a man. Do they get stitched up? Doctor's probably a man. The president's probably a man. And the soldiers that he commands are likely men, too. And that's really true. And I was reading an interview with a person named Kate Hagen, who is the director of community at The Blacklist, which is a place where if you're a screenwriter, you can submit your stuff for, like, really good feedback, I believe.
Well, you know what The Blacklist is? It's a list of the best screenplays in Hollywood that didn't get produced.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought it was like a kind of a workshopping website.
Well, they may have like, you know, made it into something, but The Blacklist is like, here are the 10 best scripts that didn't get made into features.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, well, she's the director of community there, and she's like, once you see this, you can never unsee it. And she also points out that it's not just bit parts going to men, but crowd scenes are very typically mostly men and mostly white men, which in some cases, like if the thing's set in rural Iowa at a men's club, sure, that would make sense. But if it's like New York City, that doesn't really make sense. And the thing is, Chuck, it's so common that it's just really easy to look right past and not really think about. But what Kate Hagen is saying is like, once you do start to notice it, you're going to notice it from that point on.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So all that was a nice little build up to what is the title of this podcast, which is the Bechdel test. Mm-hmm. Named after a graphic novelist named Alison Bechdel, who had this long-running comic strip called Dykes to Watch Out For. And in one of the entries in 1985, so this is a long time ago, it was called The Rule, and then subtitled With Thanks to Liz Wallace. And in one of those panels, one of the characters says, I have this rule, see? I only go to a movie if it satisfies three basic requirements. One, it has to have at least two women in it, who, two, talk to each other about, three, something besides a man. And that was in this cartoon, sort of lived quietly for many years. And then in the 2000s, it really got spread around the internet, especially in feminist communities online, especially in film websites for film buffs and stuff like that. And it became known, even though Alison Bechdel likes to credit her friend Liz Wallace, by calling it the Bechdel-Wallace test, more people know it as the Bechdel test.
Right. And actually, later on, in a blog post from 2013, Alison Bechdel said, you know, I think my friend Liz Wallace actually might have gotten the idea from Virginia Woolf, who wrote, quote, all these relationships between women, I thought, rapidly recalling the splendid gallery of fictitious women, are too simple. And I tried to remember any case in the course of my reading where two women are represented as friends. Almost without exception, they are shown in their relation to men. And that really is kind of the basis of the Bechdel test. It's kind of a little more refined and a little more stripped down. But the idea is that women characters typically are there to support the men or are deferential to the men or are subservient to men in some way, shape, or form, even movies that feature like a female protagonist.
Yeah. And we'll get to a couple of those in a minute, but if it wasn't clear enough from that comic strip, the very three basic rules are it has to contain, and this is whether or not it passes or fails, it's a pass-fail thing, two female characters, and then later on it was added that they should be, you know, named characters and not just like, and we breeze by two women talking in a cafeteria briefly.
Right.
That's rule number one. Rule number two is the characters have to talk to each other and just each other in a scene, and that their conversation has to be It can be about anything on planet Earth except for a conversation about a man or a group of men.
Even beyond planet Earth. They want to talk about galaxies? That would count.
Talk about galaxies.
You know? Talk about the Big Bang? That would count, too.
It seems so easy, and it's so amazing, and we'll get to statistics that so many films, flunk this test.
Right. Yeah, that's the point. Like, it sounds really easy, but it's not. It's extraordinarily hard for Hollywood, it turns out.
Yeah.
I think, Chuck, this is a pretty good place maybe for our first ad break. What do you think?
I say totes.
Learning stuff with Joshua and Charles. Stuff you should know.
Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
All right, so now that we've explained what the Bechdel test is, I think it's a good time to say that we're totally aware of the irony of a podcast that doesn't pass the Bechdel test talking about the Bechdel test. But I hope you guys have been listening to us enough to not rake us over the coals for it.
Yeah, well, you can do that to a podcast, though.
I think you can in some way, shape, or form. There's some sort of Bechdel test that you could apply to podcasts, for sure.
So then every podcast hosted by one or two people that are guys fail the test?
Well, we'll get into that, Chuck, because a lot of people say the Bechdel test is great in theory, but it really kind of doesn't make sense sometimes.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go back in time at least to the studio era where not a lot of films were passing the Bechdel test.
Sure.
We talked about Casablanca, of course, huge movies like Citizen Kane did not pass the Bechdel test. And a lot of movies, as you might expect from the, you know, the 30s and 40s may not pass this test because movies have gotten more inclusive, more progressive and stuff like that over time in general. But this is not like a problem from the bygone era. AFI did a separate list, 100 movies, American movies, that is, released from 1916 to 2001. That's a lot of movies. And 70 of those 100, which is almost said 70%, it is 70%, failed the Bechdel test. Only 30% of the top 100 movies through 2001 passed.
Yeah, and it kept going even beyond that, though. I think that one of the examples they give is Thor: Colon, Ragnarok, which is from 2017. It has a female villain, a female superhero. So you've got Hera and Valkyrie, I think. It's directed by Taika Waititi, and it still fails the Bechdel test.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was ever set up for success, that movie was set up for success, and it still didn't pass the Bechdel test because Hera and Valkyrie never speak to one another in that movie.
Yeah, here's another study, and this is from 2018, when they looked at, so, you know, you wonder about, like, what about quality films? I get it if, you know, if some of these dumb, stupid, big action blockbusters may not be as advanced or progressive, but surely these Oscar winners for Best Picture are. And the 2018 study from BBC found that less than half of Best Picture winners passed the Bechdel test. And since 2018, they've done much better. There have been six films since then, and five of the six passed it. So Nomadland, Coda, Everything That Everywhere All at Once, and Parasite and The Shape of Water all passed, and only Green Book failed.
Tisk, tisk, Green Book. But also, that's just Best Picture. The nominees did a little worse. In 2020, The Irishman, 1917, and Ford versus Ferrari didn't come close to passing. Joker, Marriage Story, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which, by the way, Joker, dude, that was such a terrible movie. Did you see it?
I did.
I hated that movie.
You did?
I did. And I'm sorry, anybody out there who yums it, I'm yucking it. I'm sorry about that.
No, we've covered this. That's your personal opinion.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, you can make some arguments. Each one has something that's like, well, yeah, that kind of is. And then somebody can say, well, it's not really. And then Little Women, Jojo Rabbit, and Parasite all are definitely past the Bechdel test.
Yeah, I mean, there can be, and there often are, and I think it's meant to be debated. It's It can be as cut and dry as, like, literally do any two women speak.
Right.
Because people will say, like, well, there's that one scene where those two, even though they're named characters, it was super fast. Like, I think the spirit of it is have a real sort of conversation of substance. Even though, and again, this is, it's an online sort of movie test thing for people to argue over to a certain degree.
Sure.
So, well, we'll get, like you said, we'll get into the ins and outs of it. And the
hold your
pluses
horses,
and minuses.
Bucko.
I know. I started to get in that again.
So one really roundly, man, my brain just fell out of my ear about 10 minutes ago, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah. One widely cited movie that kind of shows like the Bechdel test is not all-encompassing is Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
Was that, did Tarantino direct that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And wrote, great. Great movie.
It is a great movie. Well, it's adapted from Leonard Elmore, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Or Elmore Leonard.
Leonard Elmore.
It was adapted from Leonard, Elmore, I mean.
You know how many people just went, what?
Yeah, I know. I know. Cool your jets, everybody. So Jackie Brown has Pam Grier in it as the lead, Jackie Brown, and the
or
whole
Greer
movie.
Pam.
Right. Greer, comma, Pam. You don't forget the comma.
Yeah,
it's like the new colon. But she plays Jackie Brown, and Jackie Brown, the whole movie's about Jackie Brown just being this BA who, I can't remember, she's like setting up this whole, I think an arms deal or something to help somebody get out of something. Is that right? I haven't seen it in years.
Well, let's just say she's always one step ahead of the men in the movie.
Right. So she's
outsmarting
like,
them at every turn.
Yeah. To use a very tired phrase, she's a feminist icon in this movie. And yet, throughout this whole movie, she never once has a conversation with another woman. So technically, it fails the Bechdel test. Although anybody who has any kind of feminist tendencies and watched Jackie Brown probably is very happy with that movie, including Alison Bechdel as well, who said, like, I love that movie, but it definitely fails the Bechdel test, but it's still a really great movie. And that's something really, like, important to remember is just because a movie fails the Bechdel test doesn't make it a bad movie. And just because a movie passes the Bechdel test certainly doesn't make it, like, a feminist icon type movie.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there have been movies that pass that you might be very surprised, like Goodfellas. That one is another debatable one, but technically that passes the Bechdel test, even though you're probably like, who else besides Lorraine Bracco was even in Goodfellas, as far as women go. But there are a few, and there's the one scene where all the mob wives get together and they're having conversations with one another. And they are named. But again, it's still not like these great substantial conversations.
Can I throw out another couple surprising examples?
Sure.
American Pie 2.
Yeah.
Showgirls Passes. And then my favorite example is Weird Science, where two horny teenage boys make a beautiful woman, literally objectify a woman, and yet two girls have a conversation about how beautiful that woman is. So it passes the Bechdel test.
And some movies that are surprising that failed, Avatar, James Cameron's first dive into whatever that world is. What's it called?
I don't know. I still haven't seen it.
No, I even saw the new one, even though I kind of bag on this movie.
CGI but world?
One thing to remember about Avatar is that it had a couple of really strong female leads. There was Zoe Saldana's character and, of course, Sigourney Weaver's character. And James Cameron, historically, writes strong female leads from The Terminator to The Abyss. And, you know, he just has a strong history of working with strong female leads. And that certainly was the case in Avatar. But Zoe Saldana and Sigourney Weaver don't talk to each other. Pandora, that's it. On Pandora.
Yeah.
That's the name of the world. And there are some women kind of here and there talking to each other, but it sort of falls in the category of like they're not named characters.
Yeah, another handful of examples that don't pass, but really are still, you know, they have very strong female characters and well-defined ones. La La Land.
Oh, yeah.
Arrival. I think that's Amy Adams, right?
Yeah, great movie.
Yeah, it really is. Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Gravity. Yeah,
she didn't talk to anyone, though.
No, that's true. But Gravity.
Yeah.
That whole movie is just basically Sandra Bullock trying to figure out what the heck to do in space.
Yeah.
And the reason why is like that it doesn't pass the Bechdel test because there's basically no other female characters, but there's almost no other characters at all anyway.
Yeah. Just Clooney, basically.
Yeah. So it's not exactly like a perfect measure, but the point is to say, like, again, this is a really low bar we're setting here, and yet most movies don't pass this test. So what are we doing here, everybody? That's really ultimately the point and purpose of the Bechdel test.
Yeah. Can I name a couple of others?
Oh, yeah. This is one of the fun parts for sure.
Since we're just naming movies?
Mm-hmm.
A movie that passed, two movies that passed. One is Hitchcock's Rear Window. Hitchcock, on the other hand of James Cameron, is known for having very problematic relationships with his leading ladies off screen.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, border, well, not border on that, delve into psychological abuse of these women, you know, to try and get a performance out of them. He has cast a lot of female leads, but I wouldn't necessarily say that he has ever been known as like a feminist filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
But Rear Window has a pretty good like subplot of Grace Kelly's character, Lisa, and Thelma Ritter's character, Stella, who's the nurse to Jimmy Stewart, sort of getting together to investigate this crime. You know, the whole premise of Rear Window is that they have witnessed a crime out of the window, looking into another window of these, like, New York apartments where you can kind of all, everyone sees each other all the time.
Right.
And so they kind of team up as investigators. Which, you know, wasn't the most common thing back then.
No, and I think that's another thing that the Bechdel test reminds us is that things are more complicated and nuanced and layered than something like pass-fail, pro-feminist, anti-feminist. Like, things are often a lot more wrapped up in a lot more wax than it appears on the surface. And also, I think one of the other things that reminds us is, like, just say because of the person Alfred Hitchcock was off screen doesn't mean that the movies that he made didn't have strong female characters and can't be enjoyed for that reason too, you know? And also I want to go on record. I'm just going to put myself out there. Weird Science is a great movie.
I haven't seen it in a long time. I loved it back then.
I saw it in the last
big HBO movies.
Couple of years and it's, I think, better now than it was when I was a kid.
What was that weird deal in that movie, though, where the guy from The Hills Have Eyes and the bikers crashed that party?
I think they accidentally left they left the little thing that brings whatever they want to life, I think on some ad or something like that, or maybe on like a movie.
So that was
box.
Explained?
Yeah.
I think I just don't remember that
it's,
part. Then.
It's not explained. They just show what's happening, and then those people
you.
Show up. And I don't remember where they came from, but it wasn't just out of the blue.
All right. I think I kind of remember that now.
Now do you like the movie?
No, it's perfect.
Okay,
in every way.
Good.
Well, I had a big thing for
Kelly LeBrock.
Kelly LeBrock.
Who
you know.
Did not?
I mean, if you were a boy in the 80s, and I'm sure plenty of girls in the 80s, and you saw Weird Science and The Woman in Red, the great Gene Wilder movie, then you probably had a thing for Kelly LeBrock.
Yes, agreed.
The other movie I wanted to mention that passed that is, I guess, sort of surprising is Guardians of the Galaxy, because Marvel has sort of long been known in the Marvel, or rather the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as not really being super inclusive as far as women go. It's gotten better in recent years, but there are plenty of Marvel characters from the comics that were overlooked when it came movie making time.
Yeah.
But they have since like kind of been working those into the rotation. But in Guardians, the first Guardians, and I think one of the most sort of complex relationship arcs in any of the MCU is between Gamora and Nebula, for sure. Really rich, good emotional character arcs and interactions for them.
I have no idea what you're just talking about, but I'll take it on face that you know what you're saying.
I do. And it's, I'm not going to ruin, in case anyone hasn't seen those, but the basis for the emotion of their relationship, but it's real stuff.
Okay, great. I've even seen Guardians of the Galaxy and I still have no idea what you're talking about. But again, way to go, Chuck. I say all right. Also, what do you think about taking a second break?
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
Learning stuff with Joshua and Charles. Stuff you should know.
Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep. Lift your head up and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
All right, so now we're kind of done just talking about movies. And whether or not they passed or failed.
Yeah, let's talk about the background, the backdrop, the context.
Yeah, and whether or not it's an outdated test and are there better ways to go about this? There have been people that have written about sort of the time period in 1985 when the Bechdel test was invented in this cartoon. And 1985 wasn't the most feminist pro-woman time in United States history. But at some point, we're going to do a podcast on feminism in general and the different waves. But it just kind of ebbed and flowed over the years as far as its popularity and just visibility in the zeitgeist. And the 70s was a time where it was kind of happening feminist-wise. There were a long list of really good female-centric movie dramas that were made. And that was not the case in 1985 at all.
I take issue with that. You've got 9 to 5 from the early 80s.
There's one.
Working Girl with Melanie Griffith in like 88.
Two.
Diane Keaton, Baby Boom in like maybe 86, 87.
Three.
I could go on. That's just literally off the top of my head. It's not like I researched like feminist or strong female lead movies in the 80s. That's off the top of my head.
All right.
So I disagree. I get that, like, that's the way it's thought of is like, yes, it was much stronger in the 70s. And yes, they probably were a little more, had a little more depth. But that's just because everybody was on so much cocaine in the 80s. No one had any depth in that decade.
More depth than Baby Boom?
You're right. That was a good movie.
Oh, I like Baby Boom. I love Diane Keaton.
Oh, man. How could you not?
But the point is, except for you, most people agree that the mid-80s wasn't, you know, high time for women in film. And so that's when the test was created. So kind of keep that in mind. And, you know, like you mentioned, the pass-fail thing, there have been plenty of people that said, you know, there are all kinds of other issues with women in film that have real meat on the bone that we should really look at than whether or not, you know, there was just a scene with two women talking to each other,
right,
not about men. Mm-hmm. There was this one writer, what is her name? It is Martha Lauzon from San Diego State University's Center for the Study of Women in Television and Film in an article called Moving Beyond the Bechdel Test, where she basically says, like, uses Gravity as an example and saying, you know, a movie like that fails because, you know, she didn't talk to other women in the movie. But American Hustle will pass, which has very sexualized portrayals of women. Mm-hmm. And she's right about all this. The only thing that I will say is that, to me, I think she diminishes a little bit the value of just sort of how a test like this can become really popular and get the conversation going.
Yeah, I was surprised that she was taking shots at it. She's saying, like, the test sets the lowest possible bar for assessing the quality of portrayals of female characters.
It does.
That's the point.
Yeah, exactly.
It's saying, like, here, everybody, like, you can, anybody can step over this, and yet everybody keeps tripping up on it. And then, yeah, I think that's a really great point. Like, we're releasing an episode on this. Without the Bechdel test, I'm not sure we would have found some entry point into this, you know? We might not have been thinking about it in any real way. I don't know about you, but, like, I have never really noticed crowd scenes like that before, or that the doctor's always a guy. And now right. that I've heard of this and done this research and talked to you about this, I'm fully aware of it, and I can't wait to see my next crowd scene in a movie. Right. And I can be like, oh, man, what is this crud?
What is that, a Rush concert?
So, yeah. Man, that is so true. And yet, Rush is a great band.
Well, to me, the idea is that it's a conversation starter, and then it leads to the conversation of, like, hey, maybe let's look at how women are really portrayed in a movie. Let's look at the fact that, you know, scenes of sexual assault are just, and it's getting better, but, like,
yeah,
historically we're just sort of routinely tossed in there as plot devices. Mm-hmm. Or, like, you know, Lloyd Dobler standing outside of Ione Skye's window with a boombox after he's been told to leave, mm-hmm, is stalking.
Right.
I know it's a romantic comedy, and that's, people might say, like, oh, don't take it that seriously. But stalking historically in movies is portrayed as, like, you know, the guy that just won't say no because it's so romantic.
Right. It's true. And then also, like, in the actual like casting of older women. It gets harder and harder after a certain age to like get work. And
then if like you, older than 31.
Right. And if you do get work, it's very stereotypical work. You're probably tired or beat or maybe bitter from having been left by your husband. There's a lot to be left to be desired with how women are portrayed and treated in Hollywood. And so to just raise everyone's consciousness about this, it's a great tool for that. There's one other thing, Chuck, that I ran across in this research that I wasn't aware of before. Gina Davis, who I thought was one of the most charming people I've ever met. I actually haven't met her. I don't know why I just said that. One of the most charming people I've ever seen.
Oh, my God, you met Gina Davis?
Right? And it's funny, like, if you go back and look at The Fly, and then you just watch, like, interviews with Jeff Goldblum, and you watch interviews with Gina Davis, they're the same person. One in the same. They're, like, two sides of the same coin. It's very interesting to see.
What do you mean?
They talk the same way. They behave the same way. They think the same way.
Really?
Yes. They're very similar personality-wise.
Interesting.
Very clever, very smart, very funny, very self-deprecating.
And she's a Mensa member.
Yes, she is. So I was watching a talk that she gave at Rutgers in 2012 that I was tipped off to by Kate Hagen in a 538 article I mentioned.
Are you about
before.
To ruin Gina Davis?
No, the opposite.
Oh, okay. God, I was so nervous.
She founded a study or an institute that studies gender and media. And she's walking around like telling people like, hey, and talking to producers, like she's going to the source and saying like, have you ever noticed like all doctors are men? Or my institute did a study and it of the 6,000 films that were released between 2006 and 2009, not a single one of them showed a woman in any actual like position of power, like a president or something like that. Like she founded an institute that studies this and then is actually trying to do something about it. So it's a pretty charming talk. It's only like a half hour long, but it's I can't remember. Just look up Gina Davis Rutgers 2012, and you'll see it. But she really points out some really surprising stuff. So she's out there pointing this out too, and studying it. And like I think the more you can come up with like statistics,
right?
The more you can convince people to kind of open their eyes, and the more they open their eyes, the more you just again, like Kate Hagen said, you can't unsee it.
Yeah. Boy, I'm glad it went that way. The way you set it up, it sounded like you were like, Gina Davis was someone I thought I loved until.
No. You thought you loved her and even more now.
She was on, our buddy Jesse Thorne had her on his great interview show, Bullseye, with Jesse Thorne. And he said that, I asked her, I was like, oh man, what was Gina Davis like? And he said, she was like, the coolest aunt you've ever had. And he said the whole office was just like in love with Gina Davis by the end of the day.
Yeah, you told that before. Probably pretty easy. And I have to follow it up every time. I've heard that she bakes cookies and brings them to meetings.
Wow. Is there anything she can't do?
I don't think so.
So in 2017, there was, basically the idea of like, should we come up with something better than the Bechdel test has come up plenty of times. Mm-hmm. In 2017, 538, the website, had a campaign where they said, maybe let's try and come up with something new. Mm-hmm. Let's get a dozen women in the industry in here to talk about this stuff. And some of the things that are said, like, are surprising, but it's like, really? Is it that hard to cast a movie, for instance, where there is a black woman who is the lead in a movie that has a position of power in the movie and that has a healthy relationship.
Right.
And this is what Emmy winner, she's a writer named Lena Waithe, said, can like we just do that? Another actor named Rory Uphold said, you know, what about these film crews? Can we have film crews that are 50% women? That's a lot tougher, I think. You and I have been on film crews historically.
They're sausage parties.
Well, they're departments that are just sort of historically one or the other. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, hair and makeup is almost always women. Script supervisor, for some reason, is always women.
Yeah, you know who established that? Hitchcock.
Yeah, probably so. What else? Casting is usually women or casting directors, which is interesting. There's a lot of departments that are sort of split, like the art department. A lot of times they'll have men and women. Mm-hmm. Camera department, more and more. It used to be very historically male, but a lot more women in the camera department now and production departments. Mm-hmm. And then you have like the grip and electric departments, transportation, that are 95% men. Every once in a while, I would work with a woman that was like a grip or a key grip or a gaffer or something. And it was always like, oh, wow, that's super awesome. And it was like super noticeable. That's how rare it was. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, it's interesting when I thought about this one specifically, like 50% women on film crew. It's sort of that problem of like, you can't get the job unless you have the experience, and you can't get the experience unless you have the job.
Yeah, that's a terrible catch 22.
It's a terrible one.
I saw that 538 article, and they basically took the dozen plus women, their suggestions, and they could break them down into four categories. Behind the camera, which is what you were just talking about.
Yeah.
Intersectional, which is saying like a black woman protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
Or the protagonist themselves. They just having a woman protagonist. And then the supporting cast, things like the doctor being a woman or the president
right.
being a woman. Mm-hmm. And some passed more than others, but the one that did the most dismally was behind the camera.
Oh, sure.
Like in the actual act of making movies, it is, mm-hmm. it's just not, they're just, women are not well represented, at least right now. But I think
yeah.
the fact that we're talking about it, things change when people talk about stuff, you know?
Yeah. And it has been changing on film crews, you know, little by little, mm-hmm. especially in more recent years. You see more women directing movies than ever before. Still, percentage-wise, way low, obviously, but it is getting better.
And when that happens, when women direct movies, they found that female speaking characters jumped to 47.6%, up from 33.1% for all movies overall. Yeah.
Yeah. There are some more tests that have popped up online that are, some of these are just kind of fun and funny. The Mako Mori test from Pacific Rim, mm-hmm. one of the characters in Pacific Rim, is all films have at least one female character who has her own narrative arc and doesn't exist only to support a man's story. So that one's just a little more robust, I think, than the cut and dryness of Bechdel. Mm-hmm. And then I thought the sexy lamp test was very funny. This is from a writer named Kelly Sue DeConnick, and said, if you can remove a female character from your plot and replace her with a sexy lamp and your story still works, then you're a hack.
It's pretty great.
I love that one.
So there are some things that you can do if you want to kind of help move this along. And one is vote with your feet, where if you're a woman or a man and you're concerned by this kind of thing, and just don't go see movies that don't pass some test that's important to you, whether it's a Bechdel mm-hmm. test or something else. The Hollywood will get the point very quickly in that respect. And then apparently in some movie theaters in Sweden, they actually assign ratings to films based on gender bias. If it has an A, it means that it passed the Bechdel test at least. And I think that's good. I think that's very cool that the idea of like kind of plucking women out of this bizarre non-person status that they often find themselves in movies, or they're meant to like move the plot along for the man or something like that. Like, how could we not benefit from that? It'd just make everything a lot richer. It'd make movies a lot richer too.
Yeah. I mean, one of the great things about movies is seeing perspectives of people that aren't like you.
Right. Exactly.
You know,
but it's just trying it out too in the privacy of your own home. So you can try it on for size and see if you like it without making a commitment. That's the great thing about it.
I did mention that, you know, there are more women directing movies these days than ever before, which is true. But here's some final statistics for you. Again, from the USC's Annenberg report. And this one was from 2023, talking about 2022. And out of the 100 highest grossing movies of 2022, 9% were directed by women and 2.7% by women of color.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, this has changed some over the years. I think there was one statistic that showed a 100% increase from 25 years ago, but it's still less than a fifth of the biggest movies are directed by women. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Bechdel test is, if you apply this to independent film, the numbers skew pretty differently.
Yeah.
'Cause independent film is where you're going to find more quality scenes of dialogue between women. And in fact, a lot of independent films are all about that. And a lot of independent films are directed by women. So this is sort of the big Hollywood movies that we're mainly talking about.
Right, yeah. Which makes a one more point to make, too. That makes a huge difference because those are the movies that most people see. And yeah. If you're raising kids on this unconscious idea that doctors are men, presidents are men, soldiers are men, then that's what they expect reality to be, too. And that makes reality that way. It's life imitating art, but in a really negative way.
Yeah. And for better conversations than this, go check out the Bechdel cast.
Yes. Well put, Chuck.
It's great. And by the way, we should just mention that we don't have to get into it, but TV historically and still has always done a much better job at this kind of thing than movies.
Yeah. Have you seen One Day at a Time?
There have been a lot of great TV shows from back then that were, you know, very female-centric.
You got Alice.
Got Alice?
That's it. The Alice in One Day at a Time. Carol Burnett's show.
Oh, she's great.
Well, since Chuck just sighed heavily, it shows that he's ready to be done, which means that it's time for listener mail.
That was a wistful Carol Burnett sigh.
Okay, good. Thanks for specifying.
So in lieu of listener mail today, because we had a bunch of people that write in, we just want to acknowledge the passing of Gordon Lightfoot.
Oh, nice work, Chuck.
Passed away. Got the news today, actually, on recording day. Mm-hmm. Ironically, just, 5 days before we're going to be performing in Canada at, wasn't it, Gordon Lightfoot's home theater?
Yes. Massey Hall is his home away from home.
That's right. So I knew I still don't like the song The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, but Gordon Lightfoot certainly meant a lot to a lot of people, certainly a lot of Canadians, and we didn't want to let this one go without saying rest in peace, good sir.
Rest in peace, Gordon Lightfoot. Very nice, Chuck. I think that's a great stand-in for a listener mail.
Great.
If you want to send us a listener mail, we'd love to hear from you. You can send it via email to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Childproofing people's homes is hard, but Duracell is making it just a bit simpler. Not only are they committed to educating parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of battery safety, they make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them. Duracell even features child-secure packaging designed to avoid accidental opening. Learn more at Duracell.com/powersafely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.